Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Gun,
a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. We appreciate you all so much for being here. Just wanted to remind you right up top, please give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you get podcasts. Isn't that right, Vince? Shouldn't they do that?
Yeah.
Why? We just started and you sound like you already gotta go.
I just feel like you don't have to harangue people to give a review at the beginning of the show. Let's let them listen first.
Yeah, I know, but we got a special thing. We do things differently here. But all right, since Vince is so impatient to get going, I just want to remind people to go to patreon.com/frogcast and join the $8 Pod Yourself a Shoutout tier. This week, we didn't have any $8 donors, so I'm not going to give you a mafia name. But, you know, if you do that, then I will. So, yeah, patreon.com/frogcast, $8, Pod Yourself a Shoutout. All right, Vince, let's get started. Our guest today, this is a very special guest, one near and dear to my heart. Usually we have on, you know, someone famous or a comedian who's not famous, but I know personally. This time we have on someone who I know personally from years and years and years, a dear, dear friend of mine. Our guest today is Amelia Cady.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, Amelia. How you doing?
I'm great. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm happy that you're here. For those of you who don't know Amelia, Amelia and I known each other since college. She's known me for a very, very long time. And I thought it was important to bring her on because of the fact that the last week's episode, we had the guy from Eve 6 on, Max Collins, and we spent a good portion of it just talking about Stephen Jenkins. And I had mentioned that Stephen Jenkins was in my life because he at one point had a relationship with a friend of mine. Well, Amelia, you are that friend. And and also you're a fan of The Sopranos and you listen to this podcast.
Oh, this isn't coming as news to her.
No, you knew.
I was
you knew
drinking
about
a lot back then.
Who wasn't?
But, I did what?
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't know if you know this, Amelia, but you used to fuck the Third Eye Blind guy for a long time. And this isn't just
so
like...
So long.
This isn't just like, oh, you guys hooked up one time, like, you know, groupie shit. Like, you guys were together for a minute.
Like, are we going to have to start like Semi-Charmed Pod to really just get into all these stories?
I mean, at
Sign
this
me
point...
Up.
Yeah, at this point, I think that like season 4 is going to be
the theme song is just going to be like pod 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 pod. Yeah. Pod.
I'm podding, I'm podding, I'm living, I'm podding, I'm living. I pod for me.
Said she means me a podcast.
One more podcast. She goes pod and she speaks in my butt. All right.
Damn it.
So. Yeah, you guys were together for a while, and I just wanted to bring you on also because you listen to the show and are a big Sopranos fan. So I was like, oh, Amelia, you got to come on.
Well, I'm so happy to be here. I loved Max's episode.
Yeah.
It was like, I was listening to it, and I told you, Matt, that it was like he summoned Steven's demon. Like, he did the impression of him, and he did the little mouth, like, thing. It reminded me of Hereditary and Paimon's tongue click. Uh-huh. Like, I was listening to it and got chills. I was like, he's here. He's
yeah, it was amazing. He was able to hit. So I heard you're dating Sonia. Like, yeah. Like, it was this detail that I didn't consciously notice until you pointed it out. I was like, yeah, that was what made the impression perfect. Because he has this, it's a cocky little that he does. Like, he just smacks his... Oh, it's fantastic.
And but, the fact that Max, like, remembered that after all these years, I mean, it must be, like, what, 15, 20 years? And then... Yeah,
20 plus, because The Sopranos is exactly, like, 20 years almost from when we're recording this. And, you know, that was, that was late 90s. So that's, like, more than 20 years.
Damn.
Yeah. And like, his understanding of Steven's psyche was so spot on. It was mildly terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely, I mean, he toured with him for 2 years, so he gets it. But you don't need to be in contact with Steven for that long to know exactly what he's like and what he's about, which is kind of amazing.
It takes you 3 years.
Yeah. What were your experiences with Stephen Jenkins like?
Well,
is he going to sue us now?
No,
he's
no.
Sue all of our poor asses. I'll tell you what. The night I met him, I had hired him for an event I was producing. And after the show, I was with my best friend, Sarah, who you know, Matt, and mm-hmm. he invited us back to his hotel room, which I had booked. So I knew it was the nicest room at the Four Seasons and kind of wanted to see it.
Yeah.
And he invited us back and said, if you come to my hotel room, I'll order a big chocolate cake. And that nice. Did it for me. I was pretty drunk and hungry. And I thought that sounded like a good time. We got there and... he's like, he literally said, I'm gonna slip into something more comfortable, and went into the bathroom and changed. And I remember
he just came out in someone else's human skin. Like, yes. What the fuck?
I remember Sarah and I looking out at the view of the city and her turning me and saying, I hope this joke is worth it. Because, you know, as you know, Matt, because you know me really well, like, I'm the type of person that if it's going to be a funny story, I'm going to do it. And mm-hmm. sometimes it gets a little out of control per this relationship.
But, you really committed to the bit for like 3 years.
Yeah. Yes. Like, to a clinical level.
That's but, amazing.
So yeah, he came out in some like basketball shorts and we just all hung out, and it wasn't weird. I mean, it was super weird, but I mean, it wasn't like sexual. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a while later when I was no longer in a relationship, he conned me into meeting up.
He conned you? What, you mean he
was
just texted you?
Another cake?
No, he, oh God, it's so, I sound like so dumb. But he was like, oh, I need help with this nonprofit I'm starting. And I was like, sure. So sorry.
Oh, people, for those of you listening at home, she just did the greatest impression of a blowjob I've ever seen. Oh, that was very funny.
So.
Yeah, no, and because of you, Stephen Jenkins was just someone who was in our life for a long period of time. To this day, you know, you get the occasional text from him, and it's very interesting. So, yeah, so when we had Max on...
I heard you telling stories about me on your podcast.
Yeah, straight up. Like,
I mean...
One time I invited
listening.
Him... I invited him to... like a comedy show that I was doing in San Francisco. He said he was going to come, but of course he didn't show up on time. And I had already told all the
with him.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I told all the comedians that, the guy from Third Eye Blind is going to be here. And, he didn't show up. You guys didn't show up till later, until like, Jessica Seely, former guest Jessica Seely, was on stage.
I love her.
Oh, she's so funny. And she said, I heard that the guy from Third Eye Blind is supposed to be here, but he didn't show up, did he? And then just you hear like all it's silence, and then he goes, "Yeah, he did."
I literally put my head into my hands. I was like, "No." And then Jessica, bless her, continued with the joke, which was incredible.
Yeah, no, she's a trooper. She keeps going, but. No one's ever been more comfortable commanding a room than Stephen Jenkins. And I thank you dearly, Amelia, for bringing him into my life.
I'll tell you what, I was never bored. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think about, like, I don't want to speak disparagingly of him. I have a lot of love for him and he knows that, but
yeah,
I was trying to think of like funny stories I could tell in here that wouldn't be like compromising his privacy. And
sure.
The one that kept coming up was we got in this fight on the street where I lived on Valencia in San Francisco. And I was just like really torn up, you know, when you're like in a heated argument with someone you love. And I was just like so fucked up about it. And we got in such a bad argument on the street that he like ran away. And like, I watched him like prance away and like so flamboyantly that like, I instantly was no longer upset. I just started laughing and was like, there's no reason to be upset right now. Like, look at this grown man's prance. So I'll tell you that story.
That's amazing.
But thanks for having me on. I'm to talk about The Sopranos. I have a funny story there, which is when it came out, my mom was like, let's watch it together because we have codependency issues, so we do everything together.
Sure.
And so this was a great episode with mom stuff. And so I watched it. My mom is also extremely sex negative and like wants you to know about it. So like every episode where there was like, you know, at the titty bar, like any kind of sex shoot, oh, disgusting, you know. And it's already awkward to watch sex with your parents. So that's when I decided my strategy would just to tell her I hated The Sopranos, even though it was my favorite show.
Oh, damn.
And so
just to avoid watching it with her.
Yeah, because I'd rather have died. And so I would tell, I was like, I hate, it's too violent. Like, I hate it. And she's like, okay, titties, I'll watch it without you.
Yeah.
Yeah, gross. And then as soon as she'd leave the house, I'd watch it. So I was secretly watching Sopranos as a kid. And then
you're like, ugh, I watched when it Big again. Pussy turned state's evidence, my God. Yeah. And she's like, wait a second. How do you know that?
Exactly. But and then I rewatched it during COVID because, you know, home all the time.
Sure.
And it was really interesting to watch it as an adult. The main thing that was different for me was as a kid watching it, I remember Tony having sex with all these beautiful women and being like, that is disgusting. Like, who would
fuck this guy?
And then as an adult, I was like, I will die if I don't fuck him. Like, can I exhume his body and reanimate it? Like, truly desperate. So much sex appeal.
You're totally right. I got to admit, obviously I feel the same way, but not like a gay way, but like, as when I first watched it, I was like, yeah, who's fucking this guy? But then, you know, as I started getting older and gaining a little bit more weight, I was just like, you know, I kind of get it. Like, he's got this domineering kind of like, I don't know. He's just like a...
He's got big BDE, which is big dad energy.
He's very much
a dad.
Yeah.
Big Don energy. The other thing, the thing that still terrifies me about it is like watching it and thinking about the fact that he's like a year and a half older than me or less when he filmed this. Like, that occurred to me last episode. And every time I think about it, it still blows my mind.
Yeah, no, it is crazy because he's clearly, he's a very unhealthy looking man. He is very unhealthy, but at the same time,
I don't even know that he looks that unhealthy, but he just looks like at least 10 years older than he is. Like, I think of him as like a 50-year-old man.
Right.
And then I think about the fact that he's not, and it's strange. I'll say that.
Yeah. He's in the first season, he's in his fucking late 30s. That's just insane.
Well, I have a friend from upstate New York, and it's really his story to tell, but he knew, why can't I think of his name?
James Gandolfini.
And he knew him and would like hang out at this dive bar with him. And based on the things they did together, there's no surprise he died young. Was a total player.
Like, oh, but like drugs and stuff too?
Yeah, like, yeah, a little up the nose.
Oh, that's too bad.
Who doesn't? You know,
Who doesn't? Everyone does. Everyone's done a little bit of cocaine,
just gotten their little, get your beak wet.
Yeah, get a little gabagool up the schnazool. Schnazool is how you say nose in Italian. All right, guys. Well, before we get more into The Sopranos than we already have, I think it's time for us to play the theme song.
Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, today we are going to be talking about from season 4, episode 2 of The Sopranos, No Show. No Show, which premiered September 22nd, 2002. Vince, why don't you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
With Polly in jail, Christopher becomes acting capo, but he gets off to a bad start. That's the HBO Max synopsis. The IMDb
They're getting shorter. Synopsis. They're getting really shorter. I'm just letting you know.
It did feel too short. Like, they didn't even tell what the subplots were.
I've looked at all... They've updated all of the HBO Max synopses, and now they are all one sentence, which is like... I feel like is a direct response to our podcast making fun of their synopses.
I just think every streaming service is like trying to Mandela effect us all the time. Like, they're constantly... Yeah. Tinkering with random shit for no reason, mm-hmm. And then it's just a little bit different than you remember it, because fuck you.
Yeah. Stop trying to fuck with our brains, corporations.
Yeah, the IMDb synopsis is a little more in-depth. Chris's success earns him some jealousy. Adriana learns the truth about her friend, and Meadow still claims that Jackie Jr.'s death still weighs heavily on her.
Yeah, that's good. Those are all good. But Vince, what was going on at the time that this episode came out?
Yeah, that's right. You know, as we say, art cannot be evaluated without, you know, knowing the context in which it was released. And, you know, that's why we have the Remember When machine.
Wop, wop, teddy daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop, remember then.
Remember when. Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
That's right. We're going all the way back to September 22nd, 2002, which is like, I don't know, 19 and a half years ago.
Goddamn. I don't want to think about that.
If you conceived a child on that day, it would be Meadow's age right now.
Fuck.
Yeah. Some of the things that were going on that week. This is from the New York Post. General tells Bush, we're ready to smack Iraq. The commander of the U.S. forces in the Persian Gulf says his troops are ready for war with Iraq when and if President Bush gives the order. That was a fun time when I was like, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to invade Iraq. And then there was like 6 months where they just kept talking about it until they finally did it.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I think
that was a smart strategy. They just like put it out there so early that after 6 months of it, you were kind of just like, all right, fucking do it already.
I mean, never has like a society so obviously manufactured consent before. Right. Like, we should fight a war, huh? You know what would be cool? Smack Iraq. Just like, and people were like, oh, I guess so, dude. I don't know. They keep saying it.
We still had a lot of old school like radio DJs around back then that just, you know, that they went to for those headlines.
Yeah, they loved it.
They got another article about Gwyneth Paltrow during New York Fashion Week. Oscar winner Gwyneth Paltrow proved she's an equal opportunity muse. Just about every top designer can dress her up and trot her out.
She's the clothes hanger.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a challenge.
Yeah.
She's definitely the Audrey Hepburn of our time, said Dawn Purple, a publicist who attends yoga regularly with Paltrow.
Dawn Purple is just the gayest mafioso ever.
It's like a gay slur that somebody in the mob would say, oh, he's a Dawn Purple.
Hey, yeah. Dawn Purple over here. Fucking A.
Yeah, he's got like a no-show job at a tanning salon. Yeah, I just like the fact that they quoted a random person named Dawn Purple who was her yoga buddy, apparently.
Yep.
The top movies in the nation, Barbershop, The Banger Sisters, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and Ballistics, X versus Sever. Who could forget that one?
I remember it, but only because of the name.
Yeah, same, me too. Yeah. Same songs as last week. Pop song, Dilemma by Nelly with Kelly Rowland. And rock song is still By the Way by the Red Hot Shitty Peppers.
How dare you? You think I didn't hear you say shitty just then?
Oh, I
Fuck
did.
You, bro. Fuck you,
One Hot
bro.
Minute was still good, though.
It was very good. Mm-hmm. Wait, One Hot Minute?
Yeah. It's better than Californication.
You mean Blood Sugar Sex Magic?
Both. I mean both.
Wow. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Look at that.
I mean, obviously, disagree. Blood Sugar Sex Magic, but...
Well, Amelia, you're from San Diego area, so yeah. I feel like you have more of a right to rate the Red Hot Chili Peppers than Vince does being from Fresno. So what are your thoughts?
How dare you?
I agree. I also got to hire them for an event I produced.
Oh, shit.
And I was like, I gotta fuck Anthony Kiedis. No, I'm kidding. I was with my husband at the time, and also Anthony Kiedis barely looked at me.
Damn.
I saw.
That's what happens once you hit 30, dude.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a lot different.
It must have been like being, you know, that FBI informant that had to hang out with Christopher and Adriana.
Oh, yes, it must. And I got to say, good segue, bro, because it is time for us to talk about the episode. Now, I thought they did a great job with the synopsis there, but I feel like I should do the Bada B stories. And this week I have a very special Bada B story for you guys, and I'd like to present it to you right now.
Mm.
Soprano season 4, episode 2, no show. Chrissy gets police crew as Patsy. What are we fighting for? Metal says out loud, I wanna get out of this. Adriana tells the FBI she can't have kids. So here's your Bada B. Esplanade breaks ground. Ralphie says genies. Mole is 90 pounds. Here's your Bada B. Meadow wants to go to Europe, leave university, and Adriana gets flipped. Here's your Bada B. Bada B stories.
Oh,
yeah. Top of my dick, bitch. Yo, no. This is LA Matt.
Black. Oh, did you freestyle at the end?
No, you can turn it off. I forgot to cut that part.
Oh, wait, really? God. You didn't mean to do that?
No. Oh. Oh, my God.
Okay, I know I'm biased, but I think that's your best work yet.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I mean, and just in terms of getting all the storylines down, I think I did a great job. once again, Stephen Jenkins, please feel free to reach out at frockcast@gmail.com for a cease and desist.
Or my number.
One. Yeah.
Which you have memorized.
Yeah, yeah. Or just text me.
He's going to sue the shit out of you, dude.
I hope not, dude. All right. So, yeah, so let's just get some general thoughts on this episode. Vince, what storyline do you think you want to start with?
I mean, obviously, we start with the FBI agent, but quickly we move into the Carm Meadow conflict, which very enjoyable storyline. Meadow has come back as, you know, the obnoxious college freshman archetype that we all know and love. And
yeah, but it's mixed with something else now, because she's kind of split between two things. She's still the obnoxious college freshman, but she's also kind of like channeling her New Jersey Shore trashness as well, you know. Mm-hmm. So she's at a crossroads in this episode, where she can either choose to go back to university, go back to Columbia, or choose to be kind of like an aimless, you know, floating rich kid. Well,
I think I feel like her time at Columbia has prepared her to be even more of the bratty child that she already was. It's just, it's given her like new types of ammo to like throw in her mom's face, which was kind of like always her thing.
Yeah, yeah. She's been like throwing shade at her mom like since the beginning of the series, but I gotta say, there is a moment in this episode at the beginning where it feels like Carm fucking owns Meadow for a second. It's when Carmella asks Meadow to explain what the canon is.
Yeah.
And I have a clip of that.
Jesus, did you ever lose a friend at my age? Did you ever have to grieve when you were 19?
Meadow, honey, you should have been working this summer instead of laying out by that pool.
I read, Mom, out by that pool. Probably half the canon.
The canon, okay. What is that now?
Now? Western literature? Dead white males? Who, even in their reductionism, have quite interesting things to say about death and loss. Maybe more interesting than what you have to say.
Is Mary Higgins Clark a part of that group? Because that's what I saw you reading every time I passed by the pool.
Just damn, dude. I thought that was super slam.
She also seemed like she took the high road a bit there because, you know, when Meadow says, hey, did you ever have to grieve someone at 19? I feel like she would have been like, hey, I married a mafia don. You think I never met a dead person?
Yeah, she definitely did not take the bait there. And, you know, I think it's because, like, she's tired of having to explain to Meadow that, like, you're not the only human being who's ever existed who's experienced loss. Yeah. But yeah, it's like the relationship itself is starting to fray in this great way because like Meadow, she's already reached the point in Lise and Carm's mind where like there's no like reasoning with her. And so she's just like getting in these little burns, just being like, bitch, you've been reading Mary Higgins Clark next to the pool. Don't talk to me about the canon. It's just fucking beautiful.
What did Mary Higgins Clark write? I don't even, like, I sort of have seen that name, but I don't know.
I literally have no idea, but it's one of those names that you just, it screams like airport novel author, you know? And so I was like, hell yeah, fucking just got her, dude. Like, fuck you, Meadow. Fucking think you're so fucking hot.
We should also point out that this this episode, first of all, I feel like this era comes from a time when like open titillation was more acceptable on premium TV. And I feel like,
what do you mean?
I feel like we still enjoy that, but now it's you have to, it's so prestigey now that you have to come up with an explanation for why we like to see scantily clad people on TV. And so that, like, this episode begins, you know, with the hot FBI agent in her bra, then it quickly moves to like Meadow in a bikini, and then it's like three underwear and or bikini shots in a row.
It's a lot of words, Vince, for the TV people may you horny.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, Vince, yeah. You sound like my mom.
I'm positive.
Wearing a shirt?
I liked it. I'm not complaining. Now they dress it up where it's like, oh, it's gotta be part of the story. Like, if it doesn't, it makes sense. Like, remember early Game of Thrones where it was just like people fucking constantly, and then later on it seemed like they had to like try and justify it, even though in the first like three seasons there's at least one naked sex scene per show, and yes, it should be.
Well, it turned into a conversation about, like, rather than justifying the sex, they were like, well, you have to at least justify the rape, you know, because it was like that show was just nothing but rape. There was just like so much rape going on that show to the point where people were like, at the very least, like, you have to tell me why there's so much rape. And I feel like the way they did that was just by making Ramsay. He still was a rapist, but he was also doing a lot of torture too. So they were
they cut Reek's dick off because he was having so much sex early in the show, and they needed to punish him for it.
Yeah, he got his dick got canceled. He was the first person to ever get canceled as a character. They were just like, let's cut his dick off and please the mob.
Pro tip for any of your young listeners, which is what I did, which is you take a book cover for what your mom wants you to read by the pool and you put it over the book you actually want to read, which is how I spent most of my summers. So it was a lot of my mom saying, oh, Wind in the Willows again. And it was just James Patterson being like, then he fucked her mouth or whatever. It was great. That was my childhood.
No, that's so good.
That's what that scene took me back to that. And also my issues with my mom.
Oh, man. Did James Patterson ghostwrite the first few Game of Thrones seasons?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, your mom's just like, why does Amia keep masturbating to the Velveteen Rabbit? She reads a John Updike book and then she just plays with her pussy. It's so weird. Meadow is, you know, kind of she's going through it, you know. She's trying to figure out, like, you know, whether or not she's gonna go back to school, and she kind of drops a bomb on her parents, like, you know, saying, I don't think I'm ready to even go back to school. I think I want to take a year off and go to Europe. And
we had the gap year? Because I noticed that she'd never used the phrase gap year, even though that's what she wanted to do.
It might have
been. He uses it.
Does he
use it? In the episode. Yeah, she does in the episode. She's like, why do you think they do a gap year? Like, everybody should go to Europe.
Oh, I didn't. I must have missed it. Because I kept waiting for her to say it, and I missed it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she threw that right in their faces.
Yeah, I went to Europe when I was like, you know, 33 or something, and stayed in a hostel, which was probably, I was probably starting to age out of hostels, if we're being honest. But when I stayed there, and, like, you know, I'd never been to Europe or, like, stayed at a hostel before that age. And, you know, immediately you see, like, the 19 and 20 year old Australian dudes who, like, work there and then just take their job is, like, taking a group of, like, 15 backpackers from different countries on a pub crawl every night.
And then fucking one of them.
And I'm like, looking at this and being like, wow, these guys found a glitch in the Matrix. Like, what was I thinking? Not taking a gap year and just, like, working at a stupid hostel where I get drunk with people every night for a year.
Yeah.
Like, everyone should do that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think about that. You know, there's a lot of things in life that I feel like opportunities to live like kings that I missed out on, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I could have done that. I could have just joined that sex cult, you know?
Yeah, you got pretty close. If you had more money... Yeah, the only reason you didn't is you were poor.
I literally was too poor to join the sex cult and kept being like...
You don't, like, know that these things exist unless you're, like, at least upper middle class. So, like, those things just passed by as things that I didn't ever hear about or know that people did until much
later. But this was, looking back, this was the most affordable sex cult. It was in San Francisco. It was the one where everyone was just... It was called, like, One Taste or One Touch
or
whatever.
Oh, is that the fingering
one
cult? Taste.
Yeah, it was the fingering... Yeah. The fingering cult. And, like, you know, I knew people that were in it, and, like, I just was like, please just let me just, like, sit in on one class for free. And she was like, ask your family for $200. And I was like, I can't. I'm a drug addict in recovery. If I'm like, can I just get $200 real quick? They will be like, you are on drugs again. Like, no, it's a finger bang cult. It's different. But yeah, so it's like,
it's for pussy.
It's for pussy.
I think that, but wouldn't that cult have been, like, theoretically great, but yet everyone in there is, it seems like it'd be like HBO Real Sex, where you turn it on hoping to see, like, hot people, and then you go there and everyone is either, like, an awful old hippie or just insufferable in some other way.
Yeah,
I mean, they were insufferable, but some of them were, like, kind of hot. One of the guys who started it, I don't know if I should say started it, but he was very involved, was on, like, a dating app and was talking to me, and I know people that were in it, and I was like, there were definitely people I'd let finger me.
Yeah.
But that's not saying much, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true. You'd let anyone with a hit in the 90s finger you.
It never gets old. It really doesn't.
Yeah.
It really
doesn't. Meadow, she wants to do a gap year, you know, she wants to go abroad and she wants to get finger fucked by an Australian, and, like, and her parents are not into it. You know, Tony and Carm are trying to talk her out of it. And one of the ways they do it is, they get her to see a therapist.
Right.
And she ends up getting,
Yeah, the idea is that, well, Carmela's idea is that she can get this therapist to talk some sense into Meadow and into not going on the gap year, which I think she says, you know, maybe she'll toe the line for accountability and something else.
Yeah.
And it's very funny because it's like the whole point of sort of the mafia is that it's, you know, like the funhouse mirror of crony capitalism, basically,
right,
where they realize that this whole system is sort of a grift and it's about who you know and, you know, you're trying to get a taste of that corruption. Whereas I feel like Carmela still has these sort of naive ideas about the meritocracy and,
yes,
you know, education and all that. And that's where this really shows up is in this scene is like, she thinks that if Meadow just goes and sees another person with an advanced degree, she can get some sense talked into her about how important that is. When really she just goes and meets another rich shithead like her. That's just a grown up version of her.
Yes. Yeah.
I loved this scene.
Yeah.
As somebody that has been in therapy on and off my entire life and like mandated therapy by my mother to talk me out of things like going to Europe and getting finger painted by an Australian, I was like, they did this so perfectly. I think whoever did the styling for that therapist deserves every award.
Yes.
Her chunky jewelry, her linen outfit, her feet up on the couch, the way she talked to Meadow trying to like be an ally.
Yes.
It was chef's kiss. It was so perfect. And it made me realize that I'm at the age where I relate more to Carm than Meadow, which was kind of shocking because
Meadow is such a little shit in this episode.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, totally team Carm. And then as the therapist is talking about how, you know, education is a lifelong process and traveling is important. And like, you know, getting some higher education degree is not like the key to happiness. There was this dichotomy inside of myself where I was like, that is all true. Like the socialist to me is like, people should do whatever they want to be happy and capitalism's a scam.
Yeah.
And then the 34-year-old corporate shill inside of me was like, take this therapist degree away. She's no longer allowed to be a therapist. Meadows never to see her again. I saw one therapist as a teenager that my mom sent me to. I saw her one time. She took my side. I told my mom I never saw her again. So this hit close to home,
yeah,
to say the least.
Yeah, and you're right on the money with like she tries to be an ally, and it's great because you can tell that she is not used to this particular type of, I guess, family dynamic, and she's trying to find other reasons why Meadow is there, and I have a clip of it.
You were drinking.
Smoked a joint with my friends, too.
That's okay, as long as you didn't deliberately purge. Meadow, I'm going to ask you a question about Dad. This may be very painful for you. Did Dad ever molest you?
No.
I don't tell them what we discuss, Meadow.
Yeah, I don't think so.
What about Mom?
God, no. Unless you consider obsessing about my fucking GPA and assault.
I just...
I mean,
what about Mom? Tell me who fucked you? Who touched your kid?
I mean, this whole episode is sort of about like about willful blindness to the most obvious aspect of all their lifestyles, which is the mafia thing. You know, it's like she keeps looking for shit like, oh, what is really going on here? Maybe she has an eating disorder or she has been molested instead of the obvious thing that they just talked about, which is that her father is in the mafia. And it's the same thing with Christopher, where he's like pointing out that all these things about Adriana's new friend, and he's like, you didn't get it, like you didn't think about that, like what about?
Yeah.
And then he's like, duh, she's a dyke.
Yeah,
you're like, yeah, okay, you got it, buddy.
I love how the therapist says dad, like not your dad, and mom, not your mom. It's like, it's like a tactic she learned in like therapy 101 to like make you feel closer.
Yes.
She just seems like such a hack. And I also think it kind of speaks to like, I feel like this was the time in America when they started realizing that everybody's molesting and raping each other. And so like that became a big part of therapy is like, you know, talking about sexual abuse for the first time. So just like straight going that, it just feels like she took like an intro to psych course at community college and was like, all right, say dad, not your dad, and also rape. And then was like, all right, I got it.
Yeah, it feels...
I got the linen, I got the turquoise jewelry, let's do it.
Yeah, it feels very much like when you can tell someone, when someone's trying to sell you a timeshare or they're using like the pickup artist tactics on you where like they think they're being sly and you just see every bullet point of whatever fucking article they read right before.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, she's basically asking the same line of questioning that Adam Carolla did on Loveline. I mean, like that was as far as she got, you know, she's just like, who fucking raped you? Tell me who touched you. Well, and like the fact that she like it was like, no, it wasn't my dad. And then she's like, what about your mom? What about your mom touched that pussy? Like she just really is like, hey, listen, this is the cheat code that I've been given. And if none of these are hitting, then I don't know what to do. And Meadow is really good at deflecting in this way where she was like, not unless you consider, you know, obsessing over my grades an assault. And then she immediately takes the bait and is like, well, your mom has to learn that, you know, education is a lifelong process. like Meadow is better at manipulating the therapist and the therapist is at getting any real information out of Meadow. And it's that soprano gift. They all are genetically predisposed to bullshit and
preying on each other
Yeah. And like, so they all use their powers of manipulation, but for like different purposes. And it's great. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, now you're the man of the house.
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s, and he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it, he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This entire storyline wraps up with kind of the, I think of all of the Sopranos episodes that we've watched, I don't know if I've seen like a tour de force of acting that was so strong, that contained three different characters at like the top of their game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this blow up scene between Meadow, Carmela, and Tony that is just like so fucking good, and every actor in the scene crushes it. And yeah, and it's like I have a clip of it. It's just very impressive to me.
Did you tell Wendy that you didn't work all summer?
Wait, you're right. I forgot to mention the pivotal role of the work ethic in this family.
You can lose that smart mouth right now.
What is this, Afghanistan? I'm over 18 now. I'm a grown woman. I can go where I want and do what I want.
All right, Jesus God, we know that. Is that your only point here? Because just getting what you want is for babies, not adults.
Your mother doesn't want it.
Wow. Listen to Mr. Mob Boss.
What did you call me?
Tony.
Shut up.
Tony!
You got something you want to say to me?
What do you mean?
What do I mean? What do you mean? All these innuendos. You inferring to me that I didn't do everything I could to keep that kid from fucking himself up? That I didn't try to be a better dad to him than his own dad? God rest his soul. That I didn't try to protect Jackie Jr.? That I didn't actually smack him around because I was so frustrated? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I'm through telling people you help with environmental cleanup.
That's not what I asked you.
Like, you could talk honestly for 3 fucking seconds.
You try me.
I made my plans. I'm going to Europe and I'm getting the fuck out of here.
You've been told no.
Watch me.
Don't do it. I'm warning you. Do not do it.
So fucking
You're telling
good.
Me that I wasn't being a good father? I even smacked him around a little yeah. bit.
I even did violence to him. I even
what
did
What greater
violence.
Way to show that I care other than doing great violence to him?
Yeah.
So you know what's weird about that scene is that the next time we see Meadow, she's registering for classes.
I love that. It's
yeah.
Maybe it was just like she was being practical and decided, like, you know, being in New York, you know, at Columbia is running away anyway.
I think she's just too provincial for it. Like she's just she's a Jersey chick. Like she doesn't really belong with like the running around Europe, hanging out with the Dogma crew who's shooting a feature on DV Cam. Like she knows that's not her deep down, I think.
Yeah. And I think you're right. It is like she's too provincial.
She knows that she's too provincial to get honorable mention at the Winnipeg Film Festival for a short.
Yeah. And I think she may have met her match for the first time intellectually in that scene. Where she feels like she can kind of like, I don't know, she feels like she's smarter than both of her parents, and she's more of an intellectual, and they both kind of like take her to school. And so she just ends up going back to school, seeing what classes are available, and then choosing the philosophy class, which as soon as I saw it, I went, oh no, like this is, oh, because she's like, dude, I need to arm up for fucking round two, because these guys, they kind of got me.
Yeah. That was my alternate title for this episode, was Morality, Self, and Society.
Yeah, yeah. That was the name of the class that she signed up right. for, which is just, oh boy, she's going to get more insufferable. So
I love that, because the worst people on Earth are the ones that don't know that morality is relative.
Yeah.
That makes you the worst person on Earth.
Right. Like, you'll never find a worse person than someone who's like a professor of ethics or like a fucking, like the ethics chair at some company or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. They are.
Hey, guys.
Uh-huh.
I got to pee. I can leave the door open. It's only an extra $50.
You can close the door.
Check us out at podyourselfagun.onlyfans.p.
Podcast.
Let's get into, I think, the main storyline here between Chrissy's story and Adriana's story.
This was impressive because this actually made me feel sorry for the FBI informant, which...
Really?
Yeah, it did. Like, because I was like imagining having to hang out with these two, like a fucking junkie and his shitty mob girlfriend, who are like fighting and doing, you know, they're like doing drugs.
It does suck to hang out with a junkie. Let me tell you.
Fuck you, bro. What are you trying to say? I was cool as shit when I was a junkie.
No, you were a really fun junkie.
Yeah,
you were fun as fuck, dude.
I was just screaming about fast food. You know, Chris Moltisanti is a much more emotionally fraught junkie than I was. Yeah. I mean, I was emotional, but I was also like, you know, just trying to kick it, have a good time.
I wonder if Christopher's feet stink like yours. Did
I mean, you know, probably. I don't know. No, I feel like that dude had like he was a junkie, but he definitely like he took a lot of showers, you know.
You'd have to I mean, it's interesting what's happening with Christopher in this episode, because like my read is that first of all, he kind of has and already has like an emotional cycle where he feels like he's what do you call it? Itchy? I don't know. Touchy? He's irritable from the heroin.
Yeah.
He's like irritable and depressive from the heroin part half the time. And then half the time he's like super grandiose from like the coke and just...
Yeah, he's going through like a little manic episodes brought on, you know, due to substance abuse.
Yeah, and then this episode, like he's gotten promoted to... you know, part-time capo, and that seems to have exacerbated his like grandiosity, and suddenly he just constantly thinks he's the shit.
Yeah, so he has just been he's taken over Polly's crew while Polly is in jail pending a gun charge, and it kind of comes out of nowhere, and Patsy Parisi is obviously a little bit miffed about it. And there's a
Patsy Parisi is like a really good toxic coworker too, because it's like he's openly hostile to the boss and the entire workplace for basically like the half of the previous season where he's like pissing in the pool and he almost gets whacked. And yet when someone else gets promoted above him, he is now angry like that spot should have been his.
It's like the perfect distillation of just like the Stockholm syndrome that anyone who works in corporate America goes through, you know, where you're just like, you fucking hate everyone and you hate your boss and you're just like, but why didn't I get the fucking promotion? You know, it's like, it's very real. And,
it's too real, man. It's too fucking real, man.
Like,
oh yeah. I watched that thinking like, oh, I've probably been that person at least 3 times.
Oh, for sure. For sure. My last job, I was that person. I was like, everyone except me who works here, who's the higher ups, are all fucking dumbasses and whatnot. And then someone else would get a promotion. And I'd be like, oh, I'm going to fucking either kill someone or I'm going to fucking get a promotion. And like, and you're just like, you're mad that the idiot who you hate isn't like praising you.
Right.
And
you're just like, my mistake is always being like, you know what? Everyone else here is a fucking kiss ass and I'm not going to be a kiss ass and people are going to realize and see how real I am and appreciate me more. And like that never works.
That was my entire strategy for getting girls too. It was like, you know what I'm going to do? Never look at a girl or talk to them. Then eventually they're going to want to fuck because they're going to be like, what about this untapped piece of ass?
Yeah.
And
he seems so genuine by the fact that he's not talking to me or looking at me or hitting on me.
I could tell he respects women because he will not look at me in the eye.
Honestly, kind of, I'm What's into up? That.
Yeah.
You men like should that. Look at us less, for sure.
I mean, if it's hotter, dude, I just wish it worked, because I noticed that I didn't have like good success rate with never talking to women.
Yeah, that one I mean, didn't work out super well.
I don't know if that's... since I've known you, you've only dated the most beautiful, kindest women.
Well, not when I... but that's when I started talking to women. It was like when I was like 24, 25. Yeah. That's when I learned how to talk to girls.
You started lumming.
I started lumming, dude. That's when I realized that you got to lum the bum.
You know what I loved was when Chrissy, I forget who he says it to. Was it to Silvio? When he, mm-hmm. when he's like, I'm going to put gray stripes in my hair.
Yeah.
Fender, oh yeah. Holly. Yeah.
Is it, who did he say it to?
To Syl. Yeah.
And Syl is like, his face is just so disgusted and it's such a cringe moment. And I loved it.
Yeah.
Chrissy just like, the power has gone straight to his dong and he's lost his mind.
And he's not taking it seriously at all. He's only like, hey, I can make a joke out of it. Look at me. I'm king of the castle.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, Silvio's got this weird arc that's just kind of like wrapped up in a couple of scenes where you realize that like.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand his arc.
Yeah. Okay. So Chrissy and Patsy Parisi. First they do like a heist on the Esplanade. They steal some of the construction workers' shit, which was they steal fiber optic cable. And then Tony finds out about it.
Which is a great comment just on the mafia in general, that it's not enough to like get five no-show jobs. And to take money out of this project, you also have to steal from the construction site that you're already getting a no-show job from.
They're not just bleeding the taxpayers, but they're bleeding like individual taxpayers. Like you guys,
they're bleeding like the guy who gave them the shitty no-show jobs.
Yeah. So I mean, because that's what they're the fucking piranha. You know, they're trying to fucking skeletonize the goddamn cow. They don't just want to like take a little bit. So what ends up happening is like Tony yells at Chrissy saying like, get your shit together. Stop stealing from this multi-million dollar fucking grift we got going. And then Silvio allows Patsy to steal more shit from it. And and he says, don't worry, I'll take the heat for it, essentially. And so, then they have a scene.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a question about that. So like,
okay.
My first read on it was, I was like, oh, is like Silvio jealous of Christopher somehow? Which I didn't really understand because Silvio's like already a capo and he's already kind of like the boss's kind of right-hand man. But then now that I think about it, like he was the one trying to get Patsy whacked in the last episode. Was this his way of like trying to get Patsy fucked over?
I'm honestly unsure as to what they were trying to set up there, but it seemed like they were trying to set up like Silvio as being someone who's going to start taking liberties for whatever reason, because he clearly does. But despite whatever was going on there, there's just a great scene between Chrissy and Patsy over at the Esplanade construction site, in which they have just a beautiful fight, and I have a clip of that.
Which opens on the sign that says, Newark, the other city by the bay.
Yeah, which is great.
Oh, look what the cat dragged in.
Oh, fucking greedy cocksucker. You have to come back for more, huh? Fucking floor tiles now.
You little fucking prick.
Oh, come on.
Talk to Silvio. He gave the order, you stupid fuck.
Come on. You work for me, not fucking Silvio. I told you to knock it off.
I'm calling the police.
And don't think I forgot about you going through my fucking fiance's underwear drawer.
That wasn't me, you fucking jerk.
We'll see, huh?
So, who the fuck are you? Ralph Bunch over here.
Get him to the fucking hospital. Make sure he keeps his mouth shut. Keep your fucking mouth shut.
I like that the guy's like convulsing on the ground and the only advice he gets is, hey, keep your mouth shut.
I mean,
also that was just excellently delivered where he's like, and another thing, I caught you, you know, smelling my wife's underwear. And he says, that wasn't me. And he goes, well, what was his response?
We'll like, see about we'll see. That.
It's like a non sequitur, which is like the exact kind of thing that happens when two guys are yelling at each other in a fight.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it's
fuck
I love
you too.
That.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. All right, more for me. Like, it reminds me of that Brent Weinbach joke where you just randomly use more for me, like at random moments. It's like, hey, do you like Titanic? Nah. All right, more for me. But like, yeah, I love them just, you know, taking out their anger on the one construction guy who's like, I'm gonna call the cops, and everyone's like, whoa, we're just trying to murder each other over here, and now you want to get the police involved? Yeah. All right, let's beat this man to death. It's
you gotta wonder classic. What those construction guys are thinking, because you know, like, they haven't been told what's going on with all these mobsters just hanging out there. Like, they're just on a job, and they probably have no idea, like, who these guys are working for and why they're there and what they're doing.
I mean, I think they get it. You imagine that some of them, like, the dumb ones are like the guy who is going to call the cops, not knowing that these dudes are fucking mobbed up guys. And then I think most people are probably like, just let them do it. I'm just going to put my head down and get to work. Because how do you not know? I mean, yeah. When you see that many fat Italians with thin socks, you know, what do you think they're doing? You know,
Vito, his body is just incredible. Like, his body is like a constant sight gag in every scene that he's in.
It is magnificent. The dude looks like the blueberry lady from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Like, perfectly round body, like
short little arms like a T-Rex, and then like little Vienna sausage fat fingers.
It's just
one of my favorite moments in all of Sopranos is Vito giving the blowjob.
Oh yes.
Spoiler alert. God. I think you got another what, like 10 episodes or something, but
oh yeah, we're getting there for sure. But man, God, just because you
delight.
You know that guy, I mean, he's got an appetite, so you can tell.
He loves sucking dick, dude.
He loves it. He loves it. Like, God damn, that guy probably sucks a mean dick.
Sorry, spoiler alert. Vito's gay as hell.
Yeah.
Bless him.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe that's what it was. Maybe Sylvia was just mad that, you know, like, Chrissy is going to be capo for this particular multi-million-dollar grift. And maybe he's like, Chrissy, you're going to give this one to Chrissy? As opposed to him, who, you know, like, could have overseen that crew and had money. Maybe he just wanted the money. I don't know. But doesn't really matter, because the main storyline, or at least the one that lasts throughout the rest of the series, is Adriana and Danielle, her best friend, who came out of nowhere one day and just said all the right things. And now they're hanging out. And she opens up to Danielle.
Being like a married FBI agent with a young baby at home and a husband, and you got to hang out with like cokehead mafia chick and her heroin addict boyfriend. Talk about a bum assignment.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. It kind of depends on who you are. I feel like, you know, I feel like
sign me up.
Yeah, I feel like
riveting.
The type of people who want to join the FBI are the exact type of people who would find just life sitting around looking at a baby to be an abhorrently boring life. So I imagine that she's into it. I mean, you see how much she gets dressed and all the work she puts into doing it. Like,
that's an interesting moment where, you know, Chris puts his hand on her thigh, and I can't tell if she thinks that she's going to have to go along with this threesome to stay undercover, or, I mean, she's obviously like disgusted, but
yeah,
but it's hard to tell whether she's going to go along with it in that moment.
Yeah, it is hard to tell. It's an interesting scene, because like, it's the moment that kind of ends up fucking up her cover completely. Like, she is like, up until this moment, Chrissy has been nothing but rude to Danielle. And finally Chrissy's in a good mood. He's been made capo, and he's, you know, sitting there with these two beautiful women, and
he thinks she's gay. So he's like, he thinks she's a lesbian. So he's like, this is what lesbians do.
That's exactly right.
It's not what lesbians do at all.
Wait, Matt, did you not pick up on that?
No, I missed that. I thought it was just in general. He was just like, I could get this to work out. But now,
she is a lesbian, so he assumed that it was like automatic threesome time.
Yeah, automatically.
I love that scene so much, because so many basic cis straight men are just like, oh, lesbian, three-way. Like, yeah, that's right. Where their brain goes.
You know what lesbians love to do? Have sex with me.
Yeah.
Also, I'll add a girl in there so they're comfortable.
When they offered her Coke, I was like, number one, do a bump. It's just Coke.
Yeah, and you're allowed to.
Like, do your job. And number two, just like blow out of your nostril versus in, like nobody will notice if it's just a little bump. Like we've all been there. You know?
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. But I loved that scene because when they get in the fight after Adriana notices that he has his hand on the FBI woman's leg.
Yeah.
His excuse is, she took my hand and she was rubbing it on herself. And
yeah.
Dying laughing, imagining a woman like taking someone's hand and just rubbing it up and down, his dead hand up and down.
The
and
mechanics then
they get into this big fight and then they're arguing about it and Aide's like, oh, you said she had a nice ass, and he's like, she's your friend, I was trying to say something nice about her.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was such good Chrissy material.
It was perfect.
It was like sixth grade gaslighting and it all worked, which is the beauty of it. Like, he was like, oh, she's telling me about her fucking pants, like I care. And when he was like the one who you know, was checking her out to begin with.
I love that they start off the scene where he is just like telling them that they should form a rap group, essentially. And like that was his like into the whole thing, and I have a clip of that.
What we do is start our own group. I'll be the singer and you two can bag me up.
Hopefully. Right.
What? It's so hard to rap. My bitch, my hoe, my bitch, bitch.
What?
The joke?
Stop.
You didn't want to back me up?
Stop.
My bitch, my hoe, my bitch, my hoe, my bitch, my bitch, bitch.
What?
My bitch, bitch.
What?
My bitch, 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 bitch.
My bitch, my hoe, my bitch, my bitch, my hoe, my hoe, my bitch, my bitch, bitch.
What?
My bitch, bitch.
What?
My bitch, 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 bitch.
What are you doing?
What?
I'm gonna go.
What? Hang out. What's the matter?
You piece of fucking shit!
Oh! What the fuck?
What did you think? You were gonna fuck the two of us? You in those fucking videos!
My bitch, my hoe, my hoe, my bitch. My bitch, my hoe, my hoe, my bitch.
She came out to me. She took my hand. She was rubbing it on herself. Rubbing it on herself.
My bitch, my hoe, my hoe, my bitch. My bitch, my hoe, my hoe, my bitch. My bitch, bitch. My bitch, bitch.
Wow, was that the Chopped and Screwed remix of the show?
Wow.
Oh, man.
Incredible work.
You know, I just... as soon as he said it was easy to rap, I was like, let's see how he sounds. And I got to admit... that shit pretty slaps.
Good. Yeah. Pretty that was good. Very much like the, you know, guy does one bump and immediately starts telling you about the restaurant he's going to open.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. This dude was like so confident that he was like, I could be a rapper and you guys could be my fly girls. Like, we've all had that conversation.
I think guys in the mafia are just like when you do a line and start telling everybody about the t-shirt company that you're going to start, but then they actually do it. That's the crazy thing.
Right. Anyways, one thing leads to another. And of course, Aide, because of the fact that she fucking fucked up, by being mad at fucking Danielle for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Did you move his hand away? That was her. I love that part.
It was great. I mean, you got to hand it to fucking to Chrissy. I mean, the dude gaslights with the best of them. I mean, got her to completely turn on her friend. And, you know, fucks up the FBI's entire plan. And they decide to just like, fuck it. Let's go to fucking our usual plan A, which is to just invent crimes.
Well, and she did have coke.
Noel, it's not so much invent crimes. First of all, most of the time they invent crimes. And then sometimes they just take a little crime and tell you it's a big crime.
Sure.
And that you will go to jail forever and you will die. And like straight up, you know, fucking just the scumbag shit that the FBI does. And they do it to this poor, you know, basically innocent woman who who's never going to know shit. who's never going to learn anything important. And they decide, hey, well, yeah, we'll just scare the shit out of her. And yeah, and there's a great scene at the end with Aide and Danielle.
We're not asking you to wear a wire. We're not asking you to testify. We just want information.
Is your name even Danielle?
It's not.
What if I say no?
If you say no, you'll be placed under arrest and charged with possession and intent to distribute cocaine.
Oh, my God.
And after you make bail, you can explain to Tony Soprano why you brought an undercover federal agent into his home during Sunday dinner.
Oh, my God.
We'll probably never hear about it, though.
Oh, my
chances
God.
Are you and Christopher just disappear.
It's so much barf, too. It's the most barf. It's a bucket of barf. And
just brilliant,
I'm so glad
writing.
They did that.
Yeah.
That would 1,000% be my response to being interrogated by the FBI.
I would, 100%. Yeah. It reminded me the most of you, I think, in this episode, where I was just like, this is a perfect Amelia Cady episode, because just the way she barfs and and
have you ever seen me barf? I imagine you have.
Oh, many times. At least once. At least once. We had some times back in the day. I've seen you barf.
I thought Drea De Matteo, I thought it was one of her best scenes.
Me
on the
too.
Show. She's
me too.
So good. And when she said, "Is your name really Danielle?" Oh, yeah. Crushed me. Aww. Crushed
me. It hurts so bad, because it's like she's so good at asking that in a way that is dead serious. And like, also, it's the stupidest question she could have possibly asked, right, you know? Yeah. And you just feel like you feel so bad for her, because you're like, you are. Fuck, you are way too stupid to be in this situation. Like, this is gonna go badly for you. You know, you are not, you don't have the emotional capacity, but also just intellectually, you're not gonna be smart enough to know what to do in this situation. And
another
like,
pro tip for any listeners that don't know, rule number one in all of your lives is never talk to the cops. Ever,
never.
Ever, ever, under any circumstances. You always ask for a lawyer. I don't care what the circumstances are.
Yeah, always
it's funny,
ask
like,
for a lawyer.
When I'm listening to true crime shows, and even when I know like the criminal is a monster that did the crime, when they like agree to be interrogated without the lawyer and then they just start talking, it still makes me mad, because I'm like, what are you doing? Don't do that. You're just telling them everything.
Yeah,
you put yourself at the scene of someone where someone got shot. Now you're on the hook for felony murder.
Yeah, it is. It's real stupid and easily avoidable if you know the one rule, which is don't talk to the police ever, ever, ever.
And that brings me to my alternate title for this episode, which is just ACAB.
That's a good. Yeah, you're 100% right, because in terms of this episode and pretty much every Sopranos episode, All cops are bastards.
I think I think they could have gone into this FBI agent's life a little more, because I rarely say that, because they, you know, they go off in every direction and do justice to almost every character. But I am curious about her life of having to hang out with Adriana while she's trying to be an FBI agent with the little kid and Will Arnett at home.
Well, I mean, they in lieu of showing kind of like who she is in her regular life, they kind of do make her essentially two-dimensional, because like as soon as she is back in like FBI gear, you know, she's like wearing a fucking power suit and she's got like her hair pulled back and shit. Like she's like full sociopath.
Right.
Like
you'd have to be, because she had to be this woman's best friend for months, where like that's basically all she's doing, and all so that she could eventually like fuck that person over.
Right. And
when
like,
they pull over to the curb and Aide's there and they're like, get in the car, and she exposes herself as an FBI agent, you can tell she feels no shame or embarrassment. She's just like, yeah, fuck you. And I was like, oh, you know who the real sociopath is you. Like, not even the people in the mob. It's your FBI ass that has no remorse for fucking over this woman and getting her to share her like deep secrets with you. Like, you're the real sociopath.
Yeah.
Which
this
leads
is
us the real to gangster. Our segment, the real gangster.
Yeah. The real gangster, absolutely the FBI. And Vince, I don't know what you expect to see in the, like, in the time in between where Danielle, you know, being a pretend fucking, you know, Guido lady, or I don't know what you call a female, a Guida. Mm-hmm. Like, what is she doing in her in between time? Like, killing small animals fucking just like just staring like, at I don't a know. Black
I think
neighbor.
It would wear on her a little bit, or I would hope it would. I don't know.
Yeah, I think if they had tried to make the FBI kind of, or at least her character, more, you know, three dimensional, maybe they would have shown that. But they already made that
movie, and it was called Donnie Brasco, and it was amazing. But
and it was amazing.
Yeah. So
good. I don't know. I feel like especially post 9/11, everyone in the FBI was just like so riled up and was just mm-hmm. like, we got to stop all crime because the towers, you know, yeah. like she didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, no, now they get to finally do real police work, aka putting a wire in a mosque somewhere, hoping they hear yeah. terror plans. Like, that's yeah. what the FBI is going to become at this point. And, you know, I got to say, I'm very much looking forward to all the FBI agents being bored out of their fucking minds because none of them speak Arabic and know what to do about terrorism.
No one gets to do coke with Chrissy in the club yeah. where the Neckbreakers or whatever that band was playing. Yeah.
It's the Neckbreakers, real band from Jersey.
Yeah, what you looking at? What you looking at you? I was like, cool.
Every band on The Sopranos is like, man, I've never heard this deep cut Stones track. Why does it suck so much? And then you realize that all of them.
That is so true, dude. Every song is just like, oh, cool. This is bad. anyways, let's do favorite, least favorite.
There's a scene we didn't talk about, but it's my favorite. So I'll talk about it.
Yeah, make it your favorite. Okay. What's your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was, I think it was only like less than 1 minute long. Yes. And out of the blue, you know, oh, okay. So what we didn't cover is Tony goes over to Janice's unannounced.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, yes.
And Janice is watching whatever this documentary about war is.
No, it's Faces of Death.
It's Faces of Death.
Which is exactly what Ralphie and Janice Soprano should be watching yeah. together.
Two yes. psychos just living it up. And it's broad daylight, which I really like too. Like, watching Faces of Death ever is yeah. weird, but like in broad day, it's like the middle of the afternoon and they yes. haven't put clothes on, you know, yeah. and they're just like
pre-dinner.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 And I love that scene because Tony comes in and he looks under the kitchen table and he sees one of Ralphie's shoes and he picks it up and he just instantly knows it's
detective
Ralph,
shit.
Ralphie Cipriano.
He picks it up by the tassel. That's the best.
Yeah.
The tassel. Disgusted. He's so disgusted. And you see in that moment, like, Janice really does want his approval. Like, she yeah. really, and he plants a seed. He plants a seed about Ralphie being a piece of shit, which is like undeniable to anyone but Janice. But Ralphie right. probably lays pipe because she clearly is like into it at this point.
Yeah.
And good dick will imprison you, as we all know.
As we all know.
And it's like a 30-second scene where it's just her in bed watching TV and Ralphie on the bed trimming yes. his toenails. And one of the bits of his toenails, and it comes out of the blue, flies and smacks her in the face. And she's so disgusted. And you can just see it's like a turning point in her yeah. relationship with
you're
him.
Right.
His response is, did you catch some shrapnel? And it's like, it's the most disgusting. It makes you hate him even more, which I didn't know was possible.
Yes.
And so that was probably my favorite.
Such yeah, a dad joke. I yeah. love it.
It's a 30-second scene. Yeah, I remember thinking, like, this is the shortest scene ever, and it does so much
yeah.
work.
And that's another, yeah. that's like one of my favorite things about, I assume it's David Chase's sensibility. He wrote this with Terrence Winter, but just like mm-hmm. the willingness to go scat at a moment's notice. I think the toenail scene and then the puking, it's both, it's just like, it's going from, you know, prestige yeah. to like, oh, nope, now they're puking on each other. I love yeah. it.
Yeah.
Also, honorable mention, favorite mm-hmm. scene, obviously the therapy scene, really, like, mm-hmm. again, I know that that's real. I know yeah. from personal experience how real it is. the final scene, there has been some criticism of David Chase's ability to end things.
I haven't heard that.
No, you haven't? You should check out this podcast that I listen to sometimes. I thought the final scene where Carm's in the bath and what does Tony say? Tony's like, she goes, it's me she blames about Meadow. And he goes, what for? And then Carm just gives out a heavy sigh and then Radiohead plays.
Yeah.
That was pretty incredible.
It's pretty
and
great.
And then I also loved the scene where Tony, Carm, and Meadow are fighting that you played a clip for.
Yeah.
And I especially like when Tony yelled, "What the fuck's in Europe?" Yeah. Which is a really funny thing to say.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite scenes. My least favorite scenes were any, probably the like Mary Higgins Clark scene, just because it triggered my issues.
Yeah. Mommy issues. That's fair.
Alternate title, Mommy Issues.
Nice. I like. Vince, favorite, least favorite.
This is sort of a callback to the Jon Favreau episode, which I really enjoy anytime they have an opportunity to like rip on Hollywood and you know, like the film business, because clearly it's from a place of knowing. And so there's that scene where where Meadow shouts, "It's not a student film, it's a feature on DV Cam. Alvar hangs out with Dogma. He got honorable mention at the Winnipeg Film Festival for his short," which is like all the perfect things. Because like live action shorts are basically like short films are basically, you know, welfare for rich kids.
Yes. 100%.
They're like make work programs.
When she says Dogma, is she talking about Dogma 95? Yes. Like the Lars von Trier? Okay.
100%. Because they're going to Denmark, I think. Yeah.
Right. Which, like, at that age, that was also what I was yelling at my mom. So I get it.
Yeah. I don't really have a least favorite. I thought this was a pretty solid episode. Even the Melfi scene in this was actually doing work. And I fucking hate therapy scenes generally. But in this, this episode, they're pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. I couldn't really settle on a least favorite. But my favorite scene is Ralphie playing basketball with Vito. It's a great scene. His outfit's great, but it's all just like, it's kind of, you know, he's doing exposition basically, where he's just like working out like whether or not, you know, like, hey, you know, it's a Janice is, you know, not usually my type, but you know, he's just doing boy talk, right? Where he's just like, but hey, and it would be good to be, you know, in the family, so to speak. And meanwhile, Vito is like just trying to keep up. He's like, I don't know who decided we're playing basketball, but I hate this. And it's great for fucking for Ralphie, because Ralphie is just like, he's just whooping his ass.
Vito is also, I feel like it was kind of planting the Vito's gay seed, because you can tell he's like, oh yeah, but Janice though, titties, huh? Yeah, gotta love those. Yeah. And the hair on her head, like it just sounds the most like a gay man trying to be like, but big old milkies, like yum yum, you know? And it's like, it's so not heartfelt at all.
Yeah, that's right. He totally is. He like names her hairstyle. He's like, he's like, oh, that hairstyle's called a whatever. Anyways, her tits are nice, huh? You're right. It is like low-key setting up like his gayness.
You're also forgetting the subtle yet also on the nose brilliance of Ralphie saying nothing but net after a shot clearly hit the rim like 20 times before it went in.
Oh, I love it. I love that scene so much, man. It is it's fantastic. And I mean, in general, I would say this episode, I'd call it a solid B+.
Yeah.
B+.
Solid B+. The solidest. Yeah.
The solidest of B+s. Just a fantastic episode of The Sopranos. And a fantastic episode of Pod Yourself a Gun, you guys. This was a lot of fun. Amelia Katie, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I mean, I would have liked this if I wasn't alone 90% of the time, but it was extra special. Like, as I was getting dressed, I picked out my nice underwear, you know? This is radio. Like, It's really been a delight. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much, Amelia. I love you dearly, your dear, dear friend. Thank you for coming on. Patreon.com/Frotcast, where me and Vince talk about other things other than Sopranos. And once again, for $8 a month, you can pod yourself a shout out and I will make up a mafia name for you and shout you out on Pod Yourself a Gun. Frotcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
First of all, apologies to the people whose voicemails we haven't played, but we will get to them eventually. 415-275-0030.
It will happen very soon. All right, everyone, thanks so much for listening, and until next time, don't stop believing.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.